Please prepare to present the colors. Color guard, present the colors. Color guard, please prepare to raise the colors. Raise the colors. Salute. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Audience at ease.
I'd be amiss if I didn't recognize at least one guy over here. This is a Swift boat operator.
No, I was a repair guy.
Oh, repair. <right, right. laughs> Oh, I was just trying to build it. I know all about it because I was on PT boats myself. So. And I would like to be not amiss by introducing this lovely lady here. This is Linda Jones, and she is the workhorse behind everything that goes on here, whether it's teaching classes or whatever it happens to be. She's been there for, what did you say, 17 years now? You can't be that old.
You have to look at my son. He was in second grade, and he's now a senior at Chico.
We can't get rid of her. And if we did get rid of her, we'd chase her down and tackle her and bring her back.
And this gentleman, I don't believe, needs an introduction, but in case he does, this is Earl H. Coops, also known lovingly as Ranger Jack. We both want to really welcome all of you to Veterans Day today. We celebrate those veterans here with us. We honor those unable to attend, and we remember those who have passed from this world. We try to remember, because veterans never forget, and we should not. you should each have a little program talking about the memorial. And also, if you've been in here for past events, our order of ceremony sometimes is a little loose. So we're trying to stay on order here. We will have invocation by Chaplain Marty Hills, who I will be introducing. Also, Gary Parker, Sergeant of the U.S. Army, will lead us as a guest speaker. But you'll see of guest speakers and remembrances, you are our guest speakers. So think, if you'd like to say a few words, it'll be very welcome at that point of the program. Carolyn Swayze of Carmichael Kiwanis Club will be leading us in song. We'll have reading of the names, ringing of the bell with Gary Parker and Jack Coops, and then taps with William Fellers, Lieutenant Commander of the U.S. Navy, and also a Carmichael Kiwanian, and Kurt Pearsall of Troop 55, Assistant Scoutmaster. We're so appreciative for our local scout troops and PACs to be here for us every year. In respectfully introducing Chaplain Marty Hills, Chaplain Russell, who was here last year, spoke of her as a supervising staff chaplain. She is the wife of a U.S. Navy Academy graduate, naval aviator during the Vietnam era, retired as a commander. All of her sons have or are serving in the military, and she's been a tremendous blessing to our law enforcement chaplaincy and Chaplain Marty humbly responded, speaking of her grandfather making the ultimate sacrifice as a POW in the Pacific in World War II. That made me think of how fortunate we are to still have World War II vets here. Be sure to grab a World War II vet and listen to him. It's well worth it. And with that, may I introduce Chaplain Marty.
Good morning. I also would like to extend to you all my thanks for your presence here. I am not a vet, but I am the granddaughter, the daughter, the sister, the wife, and the mother of those who have served. And so I have a heart and a passion and a special love for our veterans. As we honor those who have served our nation, as we remember those who have paid that ultimate sacrifice, how fitting at the same time that here today we have those who will represent, who will and do represent our hope and our future, and these are scouts. So scouts will wear those uniforms with pride, with dignity, but always serve with humility. Will you all join me in a word of invocation? Please bow your heads. Almighty God, today we thank you for our veterans, for their willingness to risk all so that our nation might dwell in peace and safety. May they find the honor and recognition they truly deserve. I pray that you will heal the physical, spiritual, and psychological wounds some of these veterans have suffered. Bring a lasting peace to those who mourn the loss of comrades. Help them to find your love and mercy so they may cope with the actions they may have had to take while they served our country. We remember all those who gave the last full measure, the men and women who died in the many struggles for freedom which have been a part of this nation's history, for those who landed on beaches on far-flung shores, who struggled through jungles thick and dark, who took to the fields and forests, who ventured across oceans and seas, or those who took to the skies for our defense. For those who now serve on what must seem endless seas of sand or terrain both rough and foreboding, for every life that was and is now enfolded in the uniforms of this nation, we take this time to reverberate in the hearts and minds of these men and women, this rare breed we call veterans. We are so grateful for their example, their dedication, their sacrifice, their service, which can inspire each and every one of us during the conflict we now face. As we look to the past for lessons, please guide us. We pray for strength, resolve, and unity as our troops seek to pursue justice and to eradicate the evil of terrorism. Just as generations before have been equal to the task, we ask you to be with those who face the challenges of this generation. Grant courage to those who go in harm's way. May we realize that our service personnel represent what our country stands for. Their uniforms are a symbol of duty and valor, both in peace and in war. They take up arms to defend what all Americans hold dear: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Grant each the strength to live according to these ideals, the courage of their convictions, and the resolve to endure whatever dangers threaten. We pray that the places our troops serve may become countries of justice, peace, and mercy. Thank you that our men and women in uniform change the world one day at a time. Almighty God, may America bless you as together we fervently pray. God, bless America. Amen.
I'd like to take you back to another war that is becoming a distant memory to us. Can I, have I got that on? Everybody working? Okay. On May the 2nd, there was a medic in France, a place called Flanders Field. He had been a teacher in one of the medical schools in Canada, and he had a favorite student, like many of us have. And on the 2nd of May, all hell broke off in that particular section of the world, because the Germans, for the first time, introduced machine guns, and the French and English walked into those guns, and it was an absolute slaughterhouse. In the evening of that day, the doctor was taking care of some patients, and a man came in on a litter who was very, very badly wounded, and he died right there. Who was this man? It was a student that this doctor had taught. In those days, they buried when the heavy fighting was going on, right practically where they died, right at the area where they were giving, you know, first aid. They were called first aid places, but anything but first aid, I think. This one breaks me up. I can't imagine anything so bad. But at any rate, the thing that happened was that the boy was buried right out in front of where the ambulance stood ready to try to get men back in time to save their lives. And the boy had passed away, and the doctor tried to get a chaplain. There was no chaplains in the area. The priests, everyone, the heavy fighting around, were completely someplace else. So he had to give the service for this student of his. When the sun came up that morning, he was still sitting in the ambulance with the doors open, and he wrote this poem. In planters' fields, the poppies blow, between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky, the larks still bravely singing fly. Scarce heard amid the guns below, we are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, love and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch, to be yours to hold on high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep though poppies grow in Flanders field.
Are people feeling a little bit of sprinkles? And that is part of our historical Veterans Day. We're so glad it's not pouring rain. However, can I grab a couple young men? I'd like you to run down there and move an easy up over Gary Parker's pictures and stuff. I think that's a priority. Gary was a sergeant in the U.S. Army in Vietnam, and he was good enough to bring some things to share, and they're very valuable, so I think they're more important than covering the donuts. I'm here to speak about the history of the memorial, but Ranger Jack? Ranger Jack teaches me a lot. Taught me why are we here today. He was supposed to speak on Veterans Day. It's Armistice Day. It was the day to end of World War I, the war that was going to be the end of all wars. And this day is celebrated throughout the world. You may hear it called Armistice Day. You may hear it called Remembrance Day in another country. But it truly is the same. It is the Veterans Day and us honoring and remembering veterans all over the world. The reason we're here today with this memorial is because a teacher many years ago, before it was popular to do so, in about 1972, there was a plaque at La Sierra High School. Fellow classmates were losing their friends. They're going to Vietnam and they weren't coming back. And there was a plaque in the front hallway with their names on it. And there was room for more names. Well, it could be upsetting for some people to see that. So the principal put that plaque in a back hallway. Well, there's a teacher at that school who really cared about these young men, knew them personally, and said, this cannot be. This cannot be a transient memorial that gets moved from hallway to hallway and ends up behind someone's desk in the district office, perhaps never to be found. And we are still looking for that plaque, by the way. It is somewhere. So he went to the metal shop students at La Sierra High School. So we need something permanent. And fellow classmates made this in their metal shop. Now, they didn't make the wheels, but this teacher, Mr. Coobs, thought that was a good place to put it. Because, you know, who's ever going to move that again? The wheels were invented by R. Marcus McKinney. There's different stories even within the McKinney family of what those wheels were built for. I thought it was for gold dredging. Other people thought it was for building swimming pools. Ranger Jack tells me it was for scooping out in rice fields, scooping out. But you can see where it would get pulled behind a truck. Perhaps that's a story that we can all think of and come up with other stories. But for now, we're fortunate to have it here as the symbol for our nature area. We started doing this back in 2001, started as a very small gathering We felt very fortunate to find 8 out of 14 families of the young men on this memorial. La Sierra graduates coming, a lot of healing, a lot of getting together afterwards. Ceremonies come in later years, but I hope that that sharing and healing and getting together continues. It's that one-on-one that really means something today. And with that, I'd like to introduce our first guest speaker, Gary Parker, again, Sergeant of the U.S. Army. And then, as you wish, please come up, have the microphone. We'll have a chair for you, and we welcome family and friends.
Their father is in Afghanistan, and I'd like this young man
that wants to say a few words.
Hello. My name is Ryan Wells, and my father, Craig Wells, is in Afghanistan, and I wanted to say thank you for coming to this memorial service.
Linda, a few minutes ago, gave a reference to listening to World War II veterans, and I do have an experience with that. I was in a spa one time with a World War II veteran, and quite interesting guy. And we got into a conversation, and he says, now, do you want to hear what really happened, or do you want to hear my story? Because there are two different things that you can do. You can really give a whopper, or you can tell exactly what happened and maybe not so exciting. But I thought that was quite interesting, and I would listen to a World War II veteran anytime. There's a lot of us here, I assume, that have been taught by Mr. Coops, I being one, and he was a great teacher, and what he did here, phenomenal. A lot of people have been looking at the what I brought, and I wanted to give a reason why I did bring that. Basically, after 9/11, and there's a guy in my office that's 10 years older than I am, and we were the two oldest parts in the building, you might say, of very young people, and anywhere from 21 to 35, and never really to me, to the two of us, knew much about Vietnam, knew much about patriotism or giving or sacrificing and becoming or going into the military. It was never a gesture, it was never a conversation. Never, those poor guys, we need to get over there and help. So that's why I brought that out. I was trying to make some kind of statement that, you know, we need to be patriotic. We need to support our troops. And in some cases, just join up. And that was the main reason that I brought that. There's a lot of history there. If you look at it, you're going to see a pretty clean-cut young guy, and then you're going to see some real rebellion towards the end, and which was a natural phase for us, I guess. When I was asked to say something, Vietnam, to me, is like a burned CD. It's just there. It always will be there. And I was thinking, what could I say? What should I say? And realized that we don't need to really talk about the really bad things. Maybe we can talk about lighter issues or maybe some frustrations you might have had. And But the more I thought, I had about a week to think about this, and I don't really like writing things down and reading it, so I wanted to do it freehand, but I got to have some note cards, at least. But anyway, I would like to see other people talk and say things, and I know it's not easy. I didn't want to do this 3 or 4 years back when I started coming and saying a few words. But I finally realized that people actually want to know a little bit. I went in country in Cameron Bay, Vietnam, and the very first day I'm there, I was placed on a sandbag detail on the beach. I took my shirt off for 30 minutes. And I ended up with second-degree burns, blisters, and had a real interesting week or so after. If anybody knows about second-degree burns, they can itch like the dickens. So that didn't work out so well for me. And then I went to Ankh, kind of a rear base cav to get you ready to go wherever you're going to go. And I personally thought that the mortar rounds that I heard were basically preparation for us, get us ready for what's going to come. And to this day, I'm not sure if they were really coming in or it was just for our benefit. I never did really know. But they were all over the place. And then I went to Oshaw Valley. I was placed... We went in on chopper. There was probably about 7, 8 of us, I guess, in there. And then we were placed on a hillside, which was blown out with C4 explosives. And nobody there, just placed on the ground. And then they come out of the bushes and the trees. And these guys looked really bad. It was pretty scary that I had that to look forward to, because a lot of them had a lot of white on them from salt and sweat and hair on, you know, just atrocity looking, and that was my introduction. And Oshaw Valley was kind of a high humidity jungle kind of situation, and everything. I often wonder if I exaggerate about this, but I really don't think so. Centipedes, 12 inches long. Earthworms look like snakes. They were just like 3 feet long. And no head, but a worm. And big, round, and black, and it looked like you could look right into them. Just everything was just huge. And there are times where when you're at your fighting position and you're sleeping, I've had things crawl on my chest, pitch black. You generally raise your head, but you don't know what you got or what's, you know, you don't want to really move, kind of, because you're going to get bit or what. And then it would jump off, and that's that. You go back to sleep. Those were interesting times. I don't know if anybody's familiar with C4 explosive, but what's interesting about it is you can roll it into a little ball and light it, and cook your meals on it.
Yeah.
And one that your pork and beans, chicken noodle. But my favorite, which I created, I thought, is the cookie can. Was a fairly large can, about so high, so round, and when you cut that open with your P-38, took the cookies out. I placed, we had a can of bread. I sliced the bread into several layers. You stick one in the bottom. You open up your little can of chipped beef and your cheese. Put a little chipped beef, a little cheese, bread, chipped beef, cheese. You stack that up as high as you can. And you cook it over that C4. And basically, you had a pizza. And it was... it was great. I loved it. And I don't never understood if it was my size or what, but they felt that I should carry the M79 grenade launcher and 115 rounds on my back. Most GIs carried one canteen, maybe two. I dehydrated terribly, and I carried 6 canteens of water. I carried a 45, and I carried those rounds. I don't know if anybody's seen one. They look like a extremely large 45 shell. But I carried that, and I carried it for 30 days. I mean, I'm sorry. I carried that in a month and a half. I lost 30 pounds. The weight was just dropping off me. I went in at about 240, so now I'm down to 210. And I carried it as long as I did because I didn't really want a full point. And but unfortunately, your power is point man M79 second in line. So I was always up front when we pulled point duty. So after losing 30 pounds and having your point man cutting his way through a jungle with a machete, and obviously he's getting himself through. I'm a little bit larger, got a little more on me, and I was actually dropped to the ground with twigs. I mean, just like a little twig would put me down on the ground. I'm so exhausted. And what did I do? I cried. Of anger, frustration. It just was terrible. I just hated it. And here's a grown man sitting on the ground, probably acting like a 2-year-old, crying. But you did it out of just, and being so tired. If you took a 5-minute break when you're on the trail, I believe you could sleep 4.5 minutes. I mean, that's how tired you were. Anyway, after losing that and after that experience, I said, well, I'll take the chance of pulling point. Give me my M16. So I gave up the M79, took an M16, and refused to give up my 45. And nobody ever questioned that. They didn't say, no, you can't do that. They just got another 45 for the other guy. So I had a 45. I just felt real comfortable with it. And you know, I thought about what is it I can say that that didn't, you know, isn't gross. So I am given stories of just maybe some frustration. But one experience, well, there's many, but one experience is getting into a firefight and having illumination rounds going off above you. And you have basically a line of trees that you're looking at. Enemies out there. You're in here and illumination's going off. Okay, now illumination rounds, when they go off, they drift. So the light is constantly moving. So every tree and branch moves. Everything moves. And you're told, basically, don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes. In my opinion, every tree had whites of their eyes. So you had people that probably panicked and would shoot, but you basically were asked, make damn sure what you're shooting at. In the same firefight and in the same illumination rounds, the illumination rounds, when they go off, they explode above you, and then you get to listen to the canister coming down. and I can't do it justice, but it starts off as a little whine, gets louder and louder, and then it's a deafening sound, and then it hits the ground. And you're sitting there always wondering if that's going to hit you in the middle of the head, because I really don't think you'd survive it. And I never heard of anybody getting hit, so that must be like the lottery or something, because the odds would just seem to be right about it. When I got home, and when you look at the, you'll see the medals there. There's only one medal that meant anything to me. Really meant something to me. Was it the Purple Heart? No. Bronze Star? No. Army Accommodation with V for Valor? No. It was 25 Combat Assaults, your air medal, that I made. That medal meant more to me than you can possibly imagine. If any of, probably none of, there's probably a few of you. Audie Murphy? The great Audie Murphy. World War II hero. If I ever felt an Audie Murphy syndrome, it was flying on a chopper, coming into Hot LZ, standing on the rail of a chopper. A young kid, 20 years old, my God, yeah, it couldn't get any better than that. Wise decision to make? No, probably not, but it was great. Post Vietnam, I had trouble. I had some trouble. A lot of us did. A lot of us still do. At the very lowest point, I didn't have a job. I had hair down the middle of my back, cowboy hat, big jacket. Looked pretty ominous, I suppose. And I decided I was... I needed something to eat. I hadn't had anything to eat. I was hungry. And I sold everything, all my medals. And then found out that really not worth a whole lot. And a few years back, my wife and my daughter gave me a gift of miniature medals of each one that I got, and said that they were going to get all my medals back. And if you look at the display, you're going to see the medals there. And I couldn't have been more proud of them. So that one was a rough one, but I made it through. And one other quick story, and then I'll hopefully somebody else might want to say something, but getting back to being on a chopper and coming into a field of grass, and they can't land, you got to jump, and you're seeing the grass wave. And I jump, and I'm not hitting ground yet. Not hitting ground. Getting a little nervous. Elephant grass, 12 feet high. I landed perfectly. If any other land, I might have broken an ankle or something. So I was very lucky. But elephant grass is an interesting phenomenon. Because the chopper wings, they're blowing the top of that pretty good. But... you don't see the ground, but you expect it to be there. Wasn't there? So anyway. And I do appreciate everybody coming. Man, if I can say something, other people can, because I never wanted to do this or did it in the past. I've done it the last 3 years. I've always been a very quiet person. Not really... getting in there and being a part of much. I've got a great family that supported me and helped me life for me. Whereas at one time it wasn't looking like I really wanted to continue it years ago. I'm certainly glad I kept going. And this is a beautiful place. It'll be here forever. This is one of the first ever veterans memorials. And in the booklets, I brought some pictures that I had made and put in Ken Escott's folder and Bob Willis's folder of the track team, with pictures of Bob and Ken, myself, others. And I put it in there. And then I also have a picture that I got off of the internet for Bob Willis when he went down on the Scorpion. If you look at that picture, he looks like he looks younger than he did in high school. I mean, it just looks like a little boy. And so that's in there if you want to look at it. And I thank you for coming. Thank you.
Morford here. Betty Morford is here to say a few words. Betty?
One thing that's always amazed me are these wills that we found. To me, they have more than one meaning. To me, it is the boys that we lost in Vietnam at this school. It is the boys holding up the other boys. It is a meaning that has meant much to me in the years since my son Larry's death. I could quote him just as he talked. It reminded me of my Larry going through the jungles of Vietnam with leeches all over his body. It reminded me of when his own men overshot their marks and killed half of his platoon. It reminded me of when they went down in the tunnels of the Viet Cong, put poison gas in. Some of his boys didn't come back up. My son Larry went down and brought their dead bodies up. Somehow he made it. The last time he didn't. There was a black medic there, conscientious objector. He went down in that Viet Cong hole and brought my son up. He was pronounced dead. They put him in a helicopter to take him away, and he vomited and came back to life. He went on to win 3 more Purple Hearts for valor. He was given the most distinguished award that the Vietnamese people could give. I have those all that were given to me. What these young men have done in Vietnam was tremendous. They did not get thanked for it. Those of our young men that are fighting now will never have to face getting spit on when they came home. My son died saving his patrol. He always walked point man. The point, as he mentioned, is a dangerous spot. And my son would say, I will walk point with my man. He was to come out of the jungles in 4 days and meet us in Hawaii.
So one morning, this man knocked on our door. And my younger son, Greg, who was in the Air Force at the same time my son was in the jungles, had just come home. And he said, "Mom, there's some men here." And we knew what it was. Our son was to come out of the jungles 2 days before this happened. He was walking point. He always walked point with his men. And he was ambushed because they apparently knew that he was going out. That had a price on his head. He was coming out of the jungles when he got surrounded by a Viet Cong. And he stood there and went around in a circle and shot and shot and shot and shot and was shot until his men were all undercover and saved. This is war and it's hell. And what our men are facing today, we need to open up more veterans' hospitals. We're going to need help. The Vietnam men were not helped the way they should have been. My son was an incredible young man. He was in the Camellia Ballet. He was in the music circus. He sang. He danced. He was an incredible writer. I have his short stories, poems. This is him. And what he is doing is dancing for the man out there in the jungle in his time when he could rest. He is dancing for them. After he beat them all wrestling, he told him that he had been in the Camellia Ballet and was a dancer and a singer. But he saved his men. The only one that was killed with him was his point man. He always walked point with his men, even though he did not have to. This is the bravery of our boys that were in Vietnam. And I pray God that we never, ever have to see anything like this again. I don't know what our government can do to stop what we've got going now. But we all need to pray that it does stop. Because we don't need to lose these valiant young men, that we need to lead our country. This is a young man that was also in Vietnam. And Strutt Hines, are you here? He was supposed to be here this morning. He and my Larry are on top of his roof of his house. He was also in Vietnam, but he was in the air. As was my other son, Gregory Morford. They were pilots. I had one on the ground and one in the air. And my son that is living, my only living son, is Dr. Greg Morford. And he saves lives. He had had enough of killing. He came home, went to Brigham Young University, and became a doctor. And he's the only one of my sons left. All of these young men I knew personally. We had acreage, and I still have it over by the river. They would visit our homes many, many occasions. My home was full of children. These are the happy memories that I hang on to. This I say in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Is there anyone else here who would like to say a few words? This is Glenn Pinneger, Mr. Glenn Pinneger.
I was thinking here to this day, you know, I missed out on Vietnam at a deferment for a little while when I came back from that deferment. The war was winding down, and they had more soldiers at that time than they needed. But very touched when I walked through the Veterans Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., and I'm sure there's a reason why I had that deferment. But I would like to thank all of those that served in Vietnam and all of those that serve today. I have two sons that have just joined the Army recently. I worry about them. But they made a correct choice to defend the principles of this great land. I was named after my mother's brother, who served in Korea and passed away there. And as the flag ceremony was going on today, I thought of my grandfather's words when his son was brought home to rest. And they folded up that flag and handed it to him off in the coffin. And his words at that time were, "I gave my country my son, and in return, they gave me this flag. I would like to thank all of you that helped defend this flag. Thank you."
Why we don't have set guest speakers. You are the best guest speakers that we can have at this ceremony. It's a true sharing of love and experiences and sorrow. Is there anyone else who would like to say a few words? Veterans Day is on the 11th month, the 11th day, and the 11th hour. And I hope we will continue to gather here. And next year, perhaps more will speak and share, and there will be healing. We honor Veterans Day with a moment of silence. And then Carolyn Swayze will help lead us in song.
In your programs, there is an insert, and we're going to ask that everyone stand. And let's lift our voices as we acknowledge and remember our veterans with America, my country, 'tis of thee.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land.
Everyone, this is Cody, and Cody's going to say a few words. We are all guest speakers in training. He'd like to speak with his mom real quick first. All right, Cody, next year you're up, okay?
Going to have the saying of the names. Robert D. Anderson. Mark W. Burchard. Robert S. Byron. Jerry Cowsert. Kenneth R. Escott. Gary R. Field. Herbert Frenzel. Frank Thornburg. Ralph Gariante. Larry H. Morford. Thomas C. Pig. Randall B. Rainville. Kim Richens. Jeffrey Thornton. Robert A. Willis. Thank you.
hard to speak after attack.
That does conclude our ceremony here. But please stay. Have refreshments. Learn more about these young men of service who are so loved. Get to know each other. Remember, get to know those World War II vets. Healing does happen. It does happen here. And we're making history today by being here. Please be sure to sign the guest book. You can look at the guest books of yesteryear. They go back to 1972. Look at the memory book. We put together a book of these young men to show, to demonstrate. Yes, Elstott was the fastest guy at La Sierra. Burns was on the water polo team. He's really a nice looking guy. There's other families here. And for those families of the young men here who have not come forward, please see me. I would like to say hello, a personal hello, and to give you something. Also, remember, we're still losing those veterans. They've come back from war, but we're losing them to other causes. I'd like to mention one guy who is really special to me. Jim All is a La Sierra graduate. He was a Vietnam veteran. And he started by coming to this in the beginning, made us feel like we needed to make this keep happening, along with those families, those friends, those Vietnam vets that are coming forward and helping each other heal. Jim All passed away this past September. He was also a welder that made it so that our memorial will be in perpetuity, I hope. You see a little chain up there? He welded that on, so if this falls down, it won't fall down. So there's always going to be a little bit of Jim here each year, but we will miss him. Again, thank you very much for coming today. Please stay for refreshments. And enjoy the nature area trails adopted by Carmichael Kiwanis Club. Thank you.